Welcome to the Temple of Health radio show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have as my guest today Dr. Harold Koenig, author of Chronic Pain, Biomedical and Spiritual Approaches. Dr. Koenig has written really an extensive and complete look at chronic pain from not just physical, but also emotional, spiritual, and a complete look at chronic pain, which I think is very important to have this more holistic approach. Too often, which we'll talk about in a little bit, too often pain in our medical model is not properly diagnosed, not properly treated, and certainly, I guess, not properly appreciated by physicians, especially physicians who have not experienced pain themselves. And I think in terms of empathy, which is very important within spiritual growth circles, having experienced chronic pain is something that is very important for doctors to understand what their patients are going through. Good morning, Harold. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Well, I want to thank you for your book, and I guess we'll start off with a little information for our listeners about how you became interested in this topic and your own personal experiences with pain.
Yeah, I've grown interested in this topic because I myself have a chronic pain syndrome, and I take care of a lot of patients with that. As a psychiatrist, as a geriatric medicine specialist, this is just a real challenge that I've faced and that I've seen many others struggling with that have much more severe chronic pain than I do. I have psoriatic arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that since my 20s, and it's associated with tendonitis. In particular on the right side of my body, so it affects my right tendons around my ankle, my knee, shoulder, wrists, and in particular back. So that's been challenging for me. It's kind of fluctuated on and off, but it's a little better now than it was for quite a while. I really couldn't even type. I had to use voice activated software.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't hold a pen because of the tendonitis of my right wrist. And, coping with that has been challenging. But I also have a ton of patients who are really going through just unimaginable severe pain that interrupts their sleep and their activities with their family and is associated with some really severe depression.
Yes, that's something that we'll get into in a little bit about how pain bleeds into other areas and how the treatment of those can be very important, anything from depression to muscle spasm and all of that. So that's a very important thing to recognize when you're treating chronic pain. So let's talk a little bit about different kinds of pain. You do a good job in your book of telling physicians and other healthcare professionals as well as patients why it is important to describe the kind of pain you're having.
Yeah, there are a variety of different kinds of pain. One is one has a clear physical source.
Mm-hmm.
For the pain. You bang your thumb with a hammer, it creates damage, to the
mm-hmm.
tissue, and then that produces a pain. Or if you're in a car accident, or even if you have, a headache or back pain or whatever, it has a clear physical source. Now, sometimes when pain becomes chronic, it somehow changes the nervous system
mm-hmm.
so that you begin experiencing pain. It's called neuropathic pain, even though the source for the pain is not there anymore. So it somehow changed the nervous system such that pain impulses are sent to the pain receptive areas in the brain where you're actually experiencing pain, but there is no real physical source anymore. There most certainly had been a physical mm-hmm. source, but now it's kind of taken a life of its own.
And there seems to be some evidence, at least in some of the courses I've done recently, that improper treatment of acute pain, say injury or surgery, can lead to that pain. So that it's very, very important to adequately control pain that is acute so that it doesn't become chronic.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you have to be so careful as you're trying to control this pain because it... you know, the treatments can get you into trouble too, and for a while, you know, I was taking non-steroidals, and then I developed some kidney problems as a result, mm-hmm. and blood pressure went up, and everything, and so I was on Vioxx for years and years. And
you were lucky to get through that without problems.
Yeah, I was definitely. And then, of course, if you treat with narcotics, then you end up with just tons of potential
tolerance.
Complications.
Right.
It's almost like chasing your tail with these drugs. You take them, they relieve the pain, so that's fine. But then, you know, they're not quite as effective the next time you take them.
Right.
And then
right.
you develop constipation and
mm-hmm.
sometimes trouble concentrating. And it's just one thing after another. So for me, trying to get off of, you know, both the non-steroidals, although I still take some Motrin once a night, but
mm-hmm.
fairly low dose, 600 milligrams, trying to get off of the higher doses of non-steroidals and completely off the narcotics so that, you know, my pain is controlled with basically exercise and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, diet and spiritual practices
right.
along with, you know, this low dose Motrin at bedtime,
mm-hmm.
For me has really been a good thing.
Yeah, I have a patient population that's a little different than your average plastic surgeon. I treat many women, about 2,000 patients I've had with problems with breast implant toxicity, which is chemical and biotoxicity. You might have known it as fibromyalgia.
Ooh.
And basically, the other group of, I do a lot of hand surgery, so I treat a lot of causalgia and RSD. And you may understand that those two conditions are quite at the top of the pain, you know, the pain structure. So, and I treat
oh,
their
yeah.
pain. I am a pain physician as well as their doctor and other means. So not only the way I look at things, there's things that you can do surgically. You know, when you have RSD, and say you have a carpal tunnel with it, it's very important to get the pressure off the nerves, even though the patient has RSD. So, you know, there's a surgical approach which tends to change anatomy, which, if indicated, can be very effective in controlling chronic pain because you're actually changing physical things that then relieve pressure on nerves and things like that.
Mm.
I like to take nerves that are injured, dissect them out and pack fat around them as fat grafts, and that insulates them and doesn't allow them to scar back to surrounding structures. And that's, you know, so there's a physical surgical approach. Then, of course, there's a biochemical approach, which you just outlined, you know, the non-steroidals, things like Ultram, Tylenol, narcotics, antagonists for narcotics like Dilaudid, and all of the various, but they're all biochemical, including muscle relaxants and, you know, other, even the anti-depression medicines. These are all biochemical. Biochemistry only goes so far, as you know. It's best used in acute medicine, not chronic, because chronic blockage of any pathway is going to lead to side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes you to biophysics. Now, biophysics, I interviewed 2 weeks ago Dr. Norm Shealy, who you know is the founder of a lot of biophysics, and especially for pain. He's the developer of the TENS unit. And there, he's developed some other things that are very helpful for pain and depression. And, you know, basically, biophysics can have a very good anti-inflammatory effect on things. And a lot of the chronic pain conditions that I treat, Lyme's disease, Gulf War syndrome, a lot of the other many of the other autoimmune diseases are the result of intracellular infections. So treating the cause of the pain is very important. So we treat the intracellular infections with a variety of methods. And then once that goes away, then their joint aches go away, and they're, you know, all you treat the cause, and then the pain goes away. And then, you know, we employ a huge number of other energetic methods: acupuncture, spiritual healing, even medical intuition to inquire into the cause of the pain. You may be surprised to learn that a lot of RSD patients, when you inquire into the cause of the pain, you find it's karmic and nothing is going to change it. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Not all of them, because there are some causalgia cases. But truly, there are truly pain cases that aren't going to be relieved by anything, because it is karmic. So that's like I just think it's very important to go into the cause of pain. Because if you can get to the root cause and deal with that, then perhaps you can not just be treating the symptom of pain.
That makes sense.
So fibromyalgia, we have, you know, bio and chemical toxicity. If we do the detox and get the biotoxins and chemical toxins out of them, then their fibromyalgia goes away. So when people tell me they don't know the cause of fibromyalgia, I say, oh, yes, we do. We have quite a model for it with sick building syndrome or with breast implant disease. That's a perfect model to study fibromyalgia.
Sounds interesting.
Well, it's been a challenge, as I've had very, very difficult cases. I saw someone last night that came from California with not just one, but three life-threatening diseases. And she was in a great deal of pain, and she was wasting away, and, you see. It's very interesting to see a lot of what my patients are getting so chronically ill from are weaponized bacteria. And I spent 13 years in the military, and I know a lot about biological warfare. And they're testing for mycoplasma fermentans, which is, the patent was held by Dr. Chang at Fort Detrick. It was a weaponized mycoplasma that is highly, highly secretive. So, but we see it. I see it in a lot of nurses, because it is absolutely transmissible. It's transmissible between, you know, humans and to children and pets. So people have. In fact, we had quite a discussion last night about how to protect her husband from it. You know, what could she do prophylactically so as not to pass it on to those around her? So there you go. So you have to treat that primarily, not just treat the pain.
Yeah. You seem like you're quite an expert on pain. What? How can I help?
Well, I have...
Can I answer any questions?
Well, I think it's important to share information. I think it's important to... you know, you have written a book that really will help patients with pain, and if doctors read it, will help them. I'm not so sure that doctors read, that pain doctors read books on chronic pain, although I imagine their patients might give them your book. But it is a book that does help the patient understand all of the different aspects and all of the different approaches. So, would you like to talk about some of the, more the psychological approaches when someone has chronic pain and really nothing can be done about the source of it?
Yeah. When people develop depression in particular and, over the pain, then we try to treat the depression as best that we can.
Mm-hmm.
And that does seem to help with the pain. There are certain antidepressants that help in particular for people who have chronic pain. So I try to use different antidepressants that are effective there. I tell you, though, the religious approaches, not so much the diffuse spiritual approaches, but religious approaches to dealing with pain in terms of prayer, in terms of, you know, being part of a faith community and having that support that people get from going to church and not so much consumed with their own pain, but they start getting more involved in trying to focus on other people and trying to help others who might be having pain or in other types of struggles. So what I see is that when people get outside of themselves, that the pain a lot of times will get better because people aren't focusing on the pain as much.
And,
so,
and that's true of depression as well.
Oh, absolutely. Depression
not just pain, but the pain of depression, which is another kind of pain.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, physical pain and emotional pain seem to be very closely linked. It's hard to to kind of separate those out from each other. But, you know, coping with the pain tends to be the biggest challenge people face. And if you can derive some meaning from that pain, if you can, for example, with religious beliefs, people believe that, for example, Jesus suffered on the cross, and some people can identify with that suffering, that God knows what we're going through. And so that gives meaning to the pain. And in certain religious traditions, one can even transform the pain by using it as a way of, like in the Catholic tradition, contributing the pain towards furthering, you know, God's work in the world. So there are all sorts of ways in which pain, that religion can provide pain with meaning and purpose that make it a lot easier to bear.
Well, you know, almost anything that you go through, not just physical and emotional illness, but also financial problems or relationship problems, if you can frame meaning and purpose into them, you can deal with them much better. And you really don't even have to do it with religion. You can just do it with a general sense of knowing why you have to go through something. For example, you know, people who are going through, you know, really trying times might say, well, this is so that I will be less material-based and self-serving and more, you know, humble and compassionate and patient, okay? And that does happen. I mean, you know, people who have physical impairments become more patient. I mean, when I broke my arm, I had to be much more patient because I couldn't do things as quickly, you know. A broken arm does that. You know, you can only use one arm. And you can imagine how patient you must become when you're a quadriplegic or paraplegic.
Most,
it really slows you down, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Most people, though, you know, don't have those internal resources that that enable you to be patient and derive meaning and purpose from the pain. We have a Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health here at Duke Medical Center. And what our studies have shown, we've done hundreds of quantitative studies looking at religious and non-religious people and other ways of deriving meaning and purpose and coping with chronic illness. And it seems as though those who are religious seem to have an advantage over those who are less so. In depression, in meaning and purpose, in a whole wide range. It does seem as though religious beliefs and practices do seem to be more effective than other things that people try in order to, particularly when you're dealing with really severe chronic illness or chronic pain, where your own resources and your own rationalizations just don't do the trick.
Well, let me give you an example of something that happened a few years ago. I had a patient who had metastatic breast cancer, and you may or may not know this, but there are actually studies that show that spiritual healing is actually very, very effective in controlling the pain of cancer. In fact, it may be as effective as anything. And we have a cancer clinic, so we get an opportunity to do healing on a lot of cancer patients. So what I think happens is when you do healing, the tumors shrink, and I think they shrink because of a lymphatic thing. I think the lymphatics get better, and the swelling goes out of the tumors. At least this is my theory, having done this for over 10 years. And so the pain relief is really pretty quick, and it also tends to be lasting, which is interesting. So We do these healings, and I do some of them, but I also have healers that come in that are really good at this. In fact, we have specific cancer healers that have worked with us. And, you know, within 45 minutes, the pain's gone, and the tumors are visibly smaller, the ones that are, you know, that you can palpate on near the skin. So I believe that when people go to certain churches, the spiritual energy is so high in that church because, I mean, I've walked into churches and I've just felt this energy that is just amazing. It's the same energy that we feel in the healing room. And one of my patients with metastatic cancer, she'd come in every week or every 2 weeks to get healings to control her pain rather than take pain medicine. And she came in one day to see me for something else because I think I was her surgeon. I think she had a mastectomy for breast cancer, and I was doing a checkup for that. And I asked her if she wanted a healing. And she said, oh, no, I went to church last night. I'm fine for another week. Isn't that right?
That is amazing.
So it's energetic. I don't know if you've ever walked into a church, especially some of the cathedrals in Europe. There is an amazing energy in those churches. Hmm. And that energy is very healing. And you don't have to have other humans doing anything. Just walking into that space is very healing. And I think we have a lot to learn about why that is. But that's why I was talking about biophysics, electromagnetic energy, scalar energy. I study all, I interviewed about 30 different physicists on quantum theory. I interviewed one of the founders of the superstring theory. So I'm very much a student of consciousness and how energy affects all sorts of things. It certainly affects, I'll tell you a little story that's interesting. I can physically tell in the operating room when a large number of people are praying for my patient. It changes the energy in the operating room. And I will go out later and say to the family, did you have like a whole bunch of people at your church praying? And they'll go, oh, yes.
Hmm.
So isn't that interesting?
That is
so interesting. Prayer works distantly, okay? It doesn't, you don't have to be local, but it can be local as well. And I believe a lot of churches and synagogues and temples and, you know, I mean, not just Christian, but all of the religions, a lot of the places where people worship, there's a buildup of the spiritual energy that is quite healing if you spend any time in it. Plus, you know, if you're in a certain kind of churches, people actually lay hands on. I had one, it was the First Baptist Church here. I had almost 30 people in a room laying hands on one of the patients with cancer, and she had this wave of energy go through her. And typically with spontaneous remission, the wave starts at the head and goes to the feet, and then after that there's no trace of the cancer. So I've been studying spontaneous remission as well, but with the physicist who seemed to understand what's going on. Because certainly that's an interesting thing, this energetic phenomena that then leads to the dissolution. And it doesn't take time either. It occurs within minutes. The tumors disappear. So, and there's physics behind that. There's ways to understand that outside of just saying, well, a miracle happened. And a miracle did happen, but I think there's one of our, I think, I don't remember what scientist said. It might have been Einstein said that any sufficiently advanced technology appears as a miracle. But I believe that it is energetic, and I believe that the future of medicine, and especially pain control, is within biophysics.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of research that needs to be done to study that and look at that objectively.
Dr. Valerie Hunt, who I interviewed, she's in her 80s now. She might be actually in her late 80s. She did 20 years of research at UCLA. She was a physiologist. And she actually developed a machine that could quantitate energy within the aura. And so she could tell you that somebody had right shoulder pain and then quantitate it by the amount of red around the shoulder. And it's a shame that never got put into a form where doctors could really quantitate pain, because then you could tell if people were in pain or were malingering or, were being stoic and not telling you about the pain. And we'd be able to quantitate pain. And that would make things much easier to study within the chronic pain field. Because, as you know, I mean, how do we quantitate pain? You know, it's pretty much on a 1 to 10 scale or a 1 to 5 scale. Or, you know, it's very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
and people have great differences in their ability to tolerate pain. You talk in your book about there is a phenomena where you lightly touch somebody and they experience great pain. And that's, you know, so that's an interesting thing that would kind of make pain studies more difficult. We'd be much better off if we could quantitate this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's where I was, you know, thinking that the future is. Now, you did talk a lot about some of the things that can be done, and some of my patients have experience with this, the implantable units. You know, we know the TENS units are Dr. Shealy's and subsequent generation of his idea to kind of put electrical signals in the area and disrupt signals going back to the brain. But then we are now with a new generation of implantable devices. What's your take on those?
Well, I don't really know a whole lot about those implantable devices. I do have a patient who is going to have one actually inserted into his lower back, into the spinal column around his, you know, around his cord, and with some, you know, that he can kind of control this one, you know, injects small doses of narcotics at a critical place.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Yeah, I know that what you're talking about are the electrical stimulators that
spinal stimulators.
Yeah. And that, I've heard that they have lots of benefits too.
What they do is they put a temporary one in to see if it's going to work, and if it does, then they do the permanent one. And I have a number of patients with them, and some work very well for a while, and then they work less well. I think it depends on the kind of pain. I think if it's purely neurogenic pain, it works better. But I notice that some of my patients who have like vast inflammatory conditions, like the one patient I'm thinking of has, I went in to look at her ankle after she had a car wreck and she got all inflamed in her ankle, and I went in and looked at it. She had so much inflammation around the tendon that it was actually eating into the tendon, and I was worried that, I mean, it was so extensive, I couldn't even fix it. So, you know, I had to just start doing other things for, you know, to try to treat the inflammation and so that the tendon wouldn't rupture. And that kind of pain is not controlled by the stimulator.
Mm.
You see?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, so it does depend on the kind of pain.
Susan, I have another appointment in about 5 minutes. So, do you think we could wrap it up over the next 5 minutes?
We can. The show does go another half an hour, so I guess I'll talk about something else.
I wasn't aware of the time, so I scheduled something else around 12:30. So.
Okay. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. We have a website. It's the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health.
Mm-hmm.
And people can Google that. That's Duke University Medical Center. And it has lots of resources that people can check out and look at. So that would probably be the best way to contact me and our center.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time. And we have been interviewing Dr. Harold Koenig on his book, Chronic Pain, Biomedical and Spiritual Approaches.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
We have some announcements now for September. We are interviewing Paul Rademacher, who is the head of the Monroe Institute. He's the executive director and the author of A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed. And then we're interviewing the author of Fatty Liver on the 25th, and we'll talk about a problem that is growing with metabolic syndrome, and that's the presence of fatty liver that causes abnormalities in the function of the liver, elevated liver function tests, and is associated with intra-abdominal fat, which is biologically active, and this biologically active fat predisposes you to high lipids, high insulin resistance and high blood sugars, increases the risk of heart attack and stroke, and basically is found in a number of patients who seem to have abdominal fat rather than fat on their hips, and fat distributed all throughout their body. So that is where we get the apple versus pear shape. If you've got somebody who's more of an apple shape, that is more likely to be metabolic syndrome and in need of more urgent intervention because of the risk of all of these potentially life-threatening conditions. We'll be interviewing, let's see, I've got some of the other radio shows for later on. We'll be interviewing Carmel Bell on the 2nd of October. Her book is When All Else Fails. It's a book on spirituality. We'll be interviewing Bernard Haish, The Purpose Guided Universe, Believing in Einstein, Darwin, and God on October 9th. And we will be interviewing Catherine Frampovich, who wrote a very interesting book called Our Chemical Lives and the Hijacking of Our DNA. And this book is about the chemical threats and how they're affecting us at a biochemical and even molecular level. That's on the 16th of October. Stephanie Moran, who is the editor of Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change and Audacious Aging. We've interviewed her on many, many occasions. We'll be back to be interviewed on the 23rd of October, Natural Medicine First Aid Remedies. John James is on the 30th of October. He has a book called The Great Field, which is about the zero-point field and how we can interact with that. We're having Dr. Benora back in mid-November, Healing Research, Volume 3, Personal Spirituality, Science, Spirits, and the Eternal Soul. And we have Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, who are the author of The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time, on the 27th of November. We have a Ivan Rados, Transform Your Life Through Sacred Geometry, in December. And John Boyk will be back with us. John is a cancer researcher, and he has been working on cancer discoveries using natural product mixtures. He has a California nonprofit corporation, and he will be back to tell us about his research. Jeremy Taylor will be in mid-December, The Wisdom of Your Dreams, using dreams to tap into your unconscious and transform your life. And in September, we have a presentation September 16th. Dr. Brad Gould will be talking about electromagnetic fields at the Noetic Science Meeting, which will start around 7:15 to 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. We also will have a Noetic Science Meeting in October. Ed Edwards, who is a energy specialist and medical intuitive, will be talking about his experiences, having been studied at several institutes and universities, on his ability to affect energy, not just in the human energy field, but also in the more, the general energy field. He's been tested, and he will talk about how he learned how to interact with the energy field around us. Anyway, we have a few minutes left. I think I'll talk a little bit about Goddess Shift and the Naked Truth about Breast Implants. I'll start with Goddess Shift. Goddess Shift is a compilation work edited by Stephanie Marone. It has 42 contributing authors from all walks of life, political, social, art, opera singers, entertainers, and business leaders, and people in the medical field. I have a chapter 33, which is on spiritual healing and synthesis medicine. this radio show has allowed me to synthesize a large number of different concepts from not just medical doctors and naturopaths and other healthcare providers, but also physicists, chemists, cell biologists, and spiritual leaders into a medicine that looks at the hierarchy of different different treatments, kind of like what we just went into with the chronic pain question, anything from surgery, which is sometimes necessary to, you know, if you've got a broken bone, it's necessary to set that bone or you will develop chronic pain, all the way up to biochemistry and then biophysics, and then using spiritual energy, which is more scalar wave energy, understanding multidimensional aspects of existence, which can help greatly with pain relief and other healings, all the way up to spontaneous remission. And it may be that, you know, certain people are not quite yet ready to consider the multidimensional aspects to what they're looking at, but certainly other people are very much interested in looking at this. And I think the multidimensional aspects of any disease is important to consider rather than just looking at a third-dimensional perspective. So in this Goddess Shift, Women Leading for the Change, we have co-authors of Jane Fonda, Oprah, Madonna, Angelina Jolie, Whoopi Goldberg, Barbara Walters, Oprah, Michelle Obama, and J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling has the last chapter, and her chapter is entitled The Power of Persistence, and Harry Potter was presented to, I think, about 50 different publishers in England before it was finally accepted. So that'll give you an idea of how even a great work like that can be rejected many times before somebody actually realizes its potential, especially its commercial potential, which is an amazing thing, given that it really was a very interesting first book. But anyway, she talks about that, and all the women in the book are talking about female leadership roles, using cooperation rather than competition, using community rather than segregation and division, and understanding that we all need to work together toward a common good rather than try to separate and battle each other, as has been so common in human history. Now, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, that book came out of about 15 years of research, clinical research that I did in my practice, starting with myself becoming ill, and I had a silicone gel implants that leaked. They were Dow Corning. They were supposed to be low bleed implants, but about at 9 or 10 years, they started, maybe even as early as 8 years, they started leaking with a lipolysis reaction of the silicone shell. When the chemicals start leaking out, I think everybody gets sick. It doesn't really matter who you are. When it leaks or ruptures, you're going to get sick. Many of the patients do not recognize that it's coming from their implants, often because they believe their doctors who tell them it isn't. However, the symptoms are very, very common, and if you Google solvent toxicity, you'll see what I mean. There are some genetic types, and we talk about this in the book, and I'm one of them, that don't clear chemicals as well, most likely. And so I become ill more quickly than, say, other patients can. And many patients are able to do holistic detoxification treatments, infrared saunas or other immune supplements and other treatments, and stave it off for a while. But what they report to me is that eventually they realize it's a losing battle. And many of the patients who come to me are highly intuitive and understand that it is their breast implants that are causing them to be ill. Many other people don't realize that, and the mortality rate appears to be around 50% for those who don't get treatment, and maybe 100% eventually. But the 50% comes from a nurse that I know that had about 400 patients that she followed over 12 years between the beginning of the Dow Corning when you applied for the settlement and then the end when the 12 years later when the money was actually distributed. She called up everybody and half of them were dead. And she said probably the other half came to me, so we don't know the exact mortality rate, but believe me, it's a chemical. It's a slow death. The immune system is definitely affected. They have a lot of sinus disease, a lot of periodontal infections. Many lose their teeth. They have a number of, because of the periodontal disease, they're more at risk for heart disease and stroke. Because the spirochete that is involved in periodontal disease is also involved in atherosclerosis. They have a lot of other infectious problems, bronchitis, bladder infections, pneumonias, other soft tissue infections as their immune system goes down. They tend to have sinusitis almost universally. That is often one of the first areas to become infected. And it's often a fungal infection, not just bacterial, though intermittent bacterial. They get a chest wall infection. There's a biofilm that occurs around the implant. The biofilm often contains at first fungus and then later bacteria. When it has bacteria, it tends to hurt. Fungus doesn't always hurt, although the fungus produces biotoxin, and in many patients, the biotoxin produces a fibromyalgia illness where they have muscle ache, fatigue, mental clouding, blurred vision, and if this infection is only on one side, they'll have neurological signs just on that one side. If it's on both sides, they'll have neurological signs on both sides. There's a group of people who have silicone toxicity. Silicone toxicity is usually genetically mediated in my experience. HLA-B27, HLA-DR53 are two genetic types that if you put any silicone in them, they tend to react right away or within a week or so with an autoimmune disease, misdiagnosed a lot. One of my patients from Germany had, within 5 weeks of having her silicone implants in, now mind you, she was a German doctor in the military who was a triathlon runner. So this woman was physically fit to the degree that I never was. Within 5 weeks, she had a diagnosis of 5 autoimmune disease, and her doctors were saying, well, you're just going to have to put up with it, learn to live with it, which is a little bit why I said when I was interviewing Dr. Koenig on the chronic pain that it's really important to get to the base of pain and not just say to people that they have to live with it. You know, without knowing the cause of something, you're not going to know the treatment. So she went on the Internet. She didn't accept this life sentence of being in bed and being unable to do anything. She went on the Internet. She found me. She flew over and had her explantation and had treatment for detoxification of the silicone and chemicals. And what happened is that she got better, and she has emailed me. She's much better, and she's trying to help other women who may have similar problems. There are 8 patient stories. She's not one of them because her case occurred after I wrote the book, but there's 8 patient stories in the book. One of them is an FDA research scientist who thought that saline implants were safe because they were FDA approved. She got saline implants within a few weeks, got deathly ill, and called me. I said, I think you're HLA-B27. She was tested, and she was, and it is her information about her struggle to get better as well. So those are some examples of silicone toxicity. And so if you have a family history of autoimmune disease or a family history of any silicone sensitivity, which you can test for by putting silicone, tape it on your arm, you probably shouldn't have silicone-based implants. Otherwise, implants are about the only thing we have that are FDA approved. We may have eventually approval of fat and stem cell combinations. Right now, I talked to the research scientist at Cytori. She said that the FDA is currently studying their European trials to see if that would suffice or if they're going to require U.S. trials. So we don't yet have stem cell and fat things that are FDA approved in this country. So that being said, even when that gets perfected, I think you're only going to be able to do 1 cup to 1.5 cup sizes, which will be inadequate for breast reconstruction. So implants may be with us for a while. because of the inability to determine when silicone gel breast implants leak, and they usually leak through the back plate, and some of the newer implants leak a lot sooner than 8 years. I will tell you that. I would not recommend silicone gel implants except in extreme cases where the tissue is very, very thin in reconstruction. Saline implants need to be changed out every 8 to 10 years. Women who get saline implants need to avoid moldy or musty environments and also pay attention to their immune system. Don't go in on antibiotics without also going on antifungals, and probably take some immune supplements to keep their natural killer T cells up, which is what fights not just fungus, but also viruses and cancer. Speaking of that, the chemical toxicity and biotoxicity do affect the natural killer T cells, and women have women with breast implant disease have a, especially silicone gel, have a higher incidence of systemic cancers. Not breast cancer. Breast cancer is actually reduced fourfold, but other cancers in the peer-reviewed literature appear to be higher, including lung, colon, skin cancer, and some other cancers are higher. And this is because many of the 20 or so chemicals that are in the gel are carcinogens, and the rest seem to be neurotoxins. So neurological disease is also very, very common. Getting these chemicals out is very important. During the time of the explantation, it's critical to have both antibiotics and antifungals and immune support. Without that, women can actually become sicker than they were before the surgery. Many surgeons do not take out the entire capsule and leave silicone in the lymph nodes and in the lymphatics, and this is a source of potential problems later on. There is one textured implant made by a particular company that uses a lost salt technique that appears to be increasing the risk of a very malignant anaplastic lymphoma. I've seen over 10 patients in my practice have died of a very malignant fast-acting lymphoma after they were explanted. Before I started removing the silicone-laden lymph nodes, this shell can also be around a saline implant or silicone. So saline patients with this implant also need to have enlarged lymph nodes taken out because that textured silicone can flake off and get into the lymphatic system. So there's a lot we need. These are clinical things that I've learned in my practice. It's clinical research. More research needs to be done. But as the chemical companies do endow most of the major universities, research has been stifled and is not likely anytime soon to be done. One example of research is a peer-reviewed study published in the Journal of Rheumatology in 2001 that was partially funded by the FDA. It actually studied women with ruptured implants and found that many of them had fibromyalgia and other atypical connective tissue disease. That it was curious that the copy of that study was still up on the FDA website when, in 2006, the FDA put silicone back on the market. Then I think eight or nine FDA research scientists blew the whistle on the FDA, saying that not just in the case of silicone implants, but a number of other things, science was ignored and political agendas put forth. That, and in a recent Time magazine, which I read, opened it up, and one of the stories is entitled, "Is the FDA on Drugs?" And it's a piece on some of the problems the FDA has in being a regulatory agent that actually protects the consumer. And that's something that we need to further study and correct at a government level. Hopefully that will be done, but that probably won't be done until corporate influence has been modulated. Anyway, this is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. I hope you have enjoyed our show. It was a little disappointing that Dr. Koenig didn't want to engage in a more expanded discussion of chronic pain, but I think that perhaps he will research it later if he becomes interested in all of the other things that can be done for chronic pain. Anyway, this is Dr. Kolb. Please join us again next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastico's do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastico's to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastico's made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastico's surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastico's?
Plastico's is in Dunwoody. Plastico's is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastico's number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastico's and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.